Hello, Internet! It's All About Simian's Insight podcast, show number 143 of your weekly chat amongst the great and the good of what's happening in the world of Simian. I'm Ewan Spence, and I've got the host's chair for this week. And joining me, we have three wonderful commentators from the world of Simian. First of all, we have Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
Recently back from SEE 2010. We'll be talking about that later on in the show. We also have camera in understander lens focusy why it's better extraordinaire Steve Litchfield.
I am here as always.
And we have a thank you very much for not reminding me for 45 minutes of my life that I live in Hull, David Gills.
I'm not sure what to say to that, but hello, everybody.
Hello is usually a good start. Just before we started to record this podcast, it was like, David, I think you shouted out, everybody, put your phone on silent. And I'm wondering how many phones that would actually be. Steve, you've got probably about five or six there.
Well, it depends if I'm allowed to look using my peripheral vision. If I'm allowed to use using my peripheral vision, I think it's 18.
Yeah, so what we need, if you're an inventor, is we need some sort of signal that puts every phone within a 10-meter radius to silent, possibly using a Bluetooth profile. We would like that very much, not only here, but also when we go to the cinema. Right then, lots happening in the world of Symbian. As expected, now that the new Symbian handsets are out there, more applications are popping up, more people are playing around, doing testbed applications, seeing what these phones can do. It certainly does feel like the start of a renaissance. Or an Indian summer. Ask me again come April or May if that's what's actually happened. David, let's start with the wellness diary. This has come out of Nokia's beta labs. Tell us a little bit more about this. It sounds quite worthy.
It is quite interesting. It was initially announced in September, but it's just been released on the beta labs just yesterday. And the idea is that it'll sit in the background and monitor what you're doing. It'll use the accelerometer to act as a pedometer, and you can track how much you've been moving around, like running around like a headless chicken. And you can even set a schedule so that it'll periodically ask you questions about what you've been doing, like how many snacks have you been having. So there's probably quite an inducement to guilt there. And it'll give you nice little charts of what you're doing, and you can set targets so that you can see a chart of what you've done and what you wanted to do and how well you're doing. And Nokia have also built in support for third-party services, and as well as having Wellness Diary in beta version, they're also having a third-party fitness service in beta, which is called, now I'll see if I can get my tongue around this, the Duodecim Electronic Health Examination and Coaching Service. But as it goes on, they are going to open it up to other services. And I'm not quite sure in what form it'll take, but they're even offering support to companies who want to roll out a fitness program to the whole employer base. There's an email address on our news story if any human resources people are interested in this.
All right, then, of course, comments and the stories are all mentioned back on the website, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Steve, Nokia had Sports Tracker before, then it spun it off to another company, and this seems to be at least in the same ballpark.
It's certainly in the same lifestyle category, I'd say, and I can think it's excellent that Nokia are doing this sort of thing. The other smartphone ecosystems, if you like, aren't particularly strong in this area. So maybe it's Nokia's part focus on worldwide vision and trying to affect people's lives, you know, in third world countries and other far-flung places rather than just looking at, you know, America. So maybe that has an effect or two as well.
Indeed. So the Wellness Diary, of course, available back at Nokia Beta Labs. Big news for the Symbian world. There's been quite a lot of big news in the last week, but thankfully it all came out just before the SEE 2010 show. Rafe was over there. Rafe, from where we could see, all the big news was delivered before the conference, and the conference seemed to be quite sedate and British. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's probably one way of putting it. Obviously, the news you're referring to is kind of the Symbian Foundation being downsized or wound down, if you like, and a lot of the control passing back to Nokia, with the Symbian Foundation really just remaining a rump for dealing with licensing and patenting, to the extent it probably won't even have any permanent staff. And that's all going to happen in the sort of next few months and be finalized by, I think, April the 1st it was, I was told, which is actually when sort of the first bit of Symbian Foundation's funding was set to run out. So yes, you said that's the major news. I guess we'll come back to that in a minute. But in some ways, the Symbian shows have always been about talking to developers about the latest technologies and plans for the future, along with some cool technology demos and a chance for the community to meet. It's been relatively rare to see big news announcements there. I mean, going back a number of years, Nokia did announce the original set of E-series devices, but aside from that, I'm hard-pressed to think of big announcements, with the exception that Samsung would officially show off some of their Symbian phones for the first time. However, they tended to be out in some form or another beforehand. So, you know, it's never been a show for consumer news. And actually, there were a number of small developer announcements from a couple of companies, you know, about testing. And obviously, there was a push for Qt and a lot of information for developers around, you know, the new platform strategy that Nokia has been talking about, which we've written about, you know, a few weeks ago with regard to Qt and web runtime. And so representatives from Nokia and some of the other organizations in the in sort of the community to go and talk to. But obviously, I think you have to be realistic here. And yes, the, you know, conference was in the light of the announcements that have been made about the Symbian Foundation and the Symbian platform. And so there was that sort of degree of, if you like, somberness, because, you know, it is something of the end of an era. Although I think, as it was pointed out many times at the show and has been pointed out in all the releases, this isn't really reflective of the future of the Symbian platform. This is like the end of a chapter, and the next chapter is just beginning.
Steve, I mean, you and I have been through this before with the Symbian operating system when it was known as, actually I'm broke, so in a previous life. So it's never the end. It always starts off again. And one of the things that was stressing was a sort of idea that the foundation is changing, but the operating system isn't. And that's a distinction that's sometimes hard to make clear, certainly in the mainstream media and technology press.
Absolutely. It's, to be fair, I mean, the whole Symbian world has been confusing for the last 10 years, if you ask me. The fact that it started out with three reference designs, which may or may not have been mangled into various different product families from different manufacturers, all of which are subtly compatible at the operating system level, but subtly incompatible at the actual application level. And then some of these developing through binary compatibility breaks to Symbian 9 and S63rd edition and S65th edition with touch. And it just goes on and on and on. And yeah. These things are very confusing for us to keep track of, which is why it's important that we have definitive information on our site, and we don't necessarily expect all the other journalists to keep up. But the more simplification of this in the future, the better. And with Nokia having Symbian under their control, and with, I guess, with no other major manufacturers on board, then at least we people can just use Nokia and Symbian 2 terms interchangeably, and hopefully they'll be done.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there, Steve. I mean, one of the things that came out for me of the show, talking to a lot of the developers and the, you know, people attending there, and this included, you know, Symbian Foundation and Nokia staff, you know, a lot of the reflection was that finally we've now got a sort of clear message of what's happening going forward. And this issue around the Symbian Foundation has really been, I think, maybe set up even going back as far as a year when it became apparent that there was perhaps not going to be the support from the other manufacturers that, you know, was initially hoped for. You know, that started, of course, with Motorola dropping UIQ, and then that sort of went on where with Samsung, you know, they did release the IT910, obviously, but, you know, we didn't see anything after that. And, you know, it was finalized with Sony Ericsson, whose, you know, last handset actually is now going back a while. You know, it's I guess the VVAS and the VVAS Pro, but they've now all sort of step back from Symbian, and it was quite clear that there was going to have to be a change in the way things were funded and governed, and that's what we've now got. And you take that together with the changes that have been announced about how the platform's going to work. I mean, there aren't really any changes in the core OS. It's really about the development environment and the sort of the UI layer, and we talked about that in sort of the previous podcast, so I won't go over that again now. But it's sort of everyone's going, all these changes are sensible. All the choices that have been made are, you know, the right ones in the context. You know, there was perhaps a slight mood of, you know, there is a bit of what if about the Symbian platform, just as there was about Cyan. I guess I should put some money in the tin.
The
potential that it could have been, and it spawned off into everything else. But that doesn't mean that there isn't, you know, still an awful lot going on in the Symbian platform. It remains and will remain for the foreseeable future, you know, the biggest mobile smartphone platform out there. And so I think to an extent there was a feeling of, right, you know, this is, you know, all this uncertainty that's been hanging over the foundation, the platform for the last year to, you know, even going back further than that in some ways, because the Symbian Foundation, there were questions even when it was founded about how effective this strategy was going to be. it's now, you know, much clearer. I mean, effectively, Symbian, in the sense that most consumers think of it, is becoming the Nokia platform. There's still the Japanese market, which I guess we can talk a little bit about later. But in one sense, that offers a clarity that we haven't had before. And I think the other thing that's perhaps been missed by a lot of the media is, and maybe this is partly a result of the conversations I had at sea, it is very apparent Nokia has now made a choice that it is all about Symbian and MeeGo. You know, I don't think necessarily there was any doubt in my mind that that was probably the most likely outcome. But there were potentially other options. You know, could MeeGo have been pushed down a bit further and Series 40 brought up to sort of, you know, if you like, with Symbian being devalued into just into a small middle. But actually, it's quite evident that Symbian is going to be the fat middle and will go from sort of the upper low end of devices, you know, the $100 mark is often talked about, right up into the high end, you know, the 400, 450 euro devices like the N8 or the E7. And that's actually going to continue for quite some time. You know, MeeGo will be sitting on the top for the highest end devices and perhaps things going beyond what we've traditionally thought of the smartphone. But that, you know, that confirmation, and very obviously so, about Nokia's commitment to Symbian, especially given, you know, Stephen Elop coming in and there was a question about whether he might look to change that, that's not going to happen now. So in a lot of ways, there's far more certainty about the future of the Symbian platform now than there was 12 months ago. And in that extent, you know, having people making investments in it, be it developers or, you know, chipset providers or whoever it is within the community, is probably a very good thing for the platform. There is going to now be a period of slight uncertainty while Nokia announce what they want to do. You know, they haven't specified exactly how the transfer from the Symbian Foundation is going to work. They've just referred to this open model. I think it's important for them to get on top of that quickly and announce the details of how they want to do it. I mean, it's obvious they're going to keep it as an open source platform, but, you know, what sort of contribution process is that going to be? How will the community be able to get involved? You know, I think the one, you know, problem with the announcement was they sort of had to make it around this show, and Nokia aren't quite ready to come forward with all the details about how it's going to work in detail. And so there's just a slight risk that there'll be a loss of momentum in the next few months. But Nokia, you know, having talked to their spokespeople about this, I had a good interview with Joe Harlan. There'll be details on the site on that later on. They're quite aware that they need to address those issues quickly, and you know, you also see that in the development around Qt, particularly with the Qt Quick components. So there's that transition period is going to be a bit of uncertainty, but after that, I think, you know, in one sense, the future and looking further ahead is much more stable and much more certain than it has been. It was always the most likely outcome, but this will be something that's easier now to explain to developers, to analysts, to other media, that this future is much more set in stone, if you like, and there isn't that uncertainty, which has, I think, plagued, you know, some of the communications around the platform for the last couple of years. And so in that sense, I think it's, you know, it can be seen in a very positive light.
Rafe, can I just take you back 2 or 3 years? We've seen announcements around the SEE, the Symbian smartphone show previously, that have promised to see change. The obvious one is the open sourcing of Symbian. Mm. What was the nature of the show floor like around this announcement compared to those other changes in the past? Or maybe even when there were smaller changes, such as when Nigel Clifford took over?
That's a tricky question to answer, because you did get a range of opinions. I mean, I think when the Symbian Foundation was announced, that wasn't at one of the shows, but, you know, the open source then got talked about subsequently. There was a lot of excitement around that, and there still is, honestly. And of course, you know, these announcements don't really affect the fact it will be an open source, although, as I say, there are some questions around how exactly things will work. And so there was a lot of sort of discussion about that, you know, what will Nokia do? With most people coming to the conclusion that Nokia would, you know, almost certainly do the right thing. They just wanted to know exactly how they'd do it. But equally well, you know, this kind of uncertainty that has been around the platform, you know, people appreciated that was now starting to disappear. I think, you know, a lot of the people there were Symbian Foundation staffers, you know, had come over. And so for them, it was the end of an era. And, you know, clearly there's always an individual cost and they're all being made redundant and we'll have to go looking for jobs. So an element of, you know, sadness there. But most of them seem to think, yeah, this is actually exactly what we needed, in that we realised that it wasn't going to be multiple manufacturers. You know, the context of the Symbian Foundation, the way it was set up, was the right decision at the time, but circumstances have changed. and people were very pleased to have that kind of certainty coming back in. And you have to remember at sea, you know, all the people there are pretty much, you know, involved in the Symbian community, the ecosystem, to give it the sort of word that Nokia and Symbian like to use, in one way or another. And so for a lot of them, it was sort of a certainty about the future from a broad perspective, even if it was, you know, the end for the Symbian Foundation staffers themselves. And, you know, while the Symbian Foundation is kind of the, you know, the head organisation, it's worth reiterating, as we've done many times before, the vast majority of work on the Symbian platform itself is done internally at Nokia, and there's, you know, no change there. I mean, in that sense, probably the changes that were announced a couple of weeks ago in terms of the job losses will probably have a more significant impact on the future of the platform than the actual sort of winding back of the Symbian Foundation itself. And so to come back to your original question, I think probably, you know, there was just as much excitement around this and probably a realization that it would happen more quickly. And so we would see the sort of fruits, if you like, of this announcement in relatively short order.
Now, I wrote about what I thought about the changeover with the Symbian Foundation this week. There's a story called Symbian's Move Back to Nokia is Good News. And just looking back as well, I mean, the two big events that really kind of, at least in the public eye, pushed this to happen was Samsung and Sony Ericsson pulling out and saying we're not going to make Symbian devices anymore. Now, I would argue that they weren't selling enough Symbian devices because they didn't try hard enough, they didn't make enough handsets, and they didn't work, they didn't invest in the service layer, because Nokia has Ovi, and the Ovi store and Ovi maps make Symbian phones very useful, and it is very noticeable when you don't have it. But looking forwards, I was kind of wanting to get all of your take on this, is that I think that Symbian has actually dodged a bullet, because if we look at Android phones, the platform is open and every manufacturer is doing their own front end, and pretty much any review of an Android device you read, it's a selling point that when you get a vanilla Android user experience. And on Symbian, the way the Eclipse public license was going to work, the same thing could have happened. But now Symbian is Nokia's. Symbian means Nokia. As far as a consumer is concerned, if I'm advising someone about buying a phone, I won't say, oh, get a Symbian phone, because I think a lot of normal people, not people like geeks like us, don't know what Symbian is, but they know what Nokia is, because Nokia's been there for decades. So when I'm talking to them, I will talk to them about a Nokia phone. So what do the rest of you think?
I think that's absolutely right, David, in that, you know, the Symbian brand has never been particularly strong, and I think Android is unusual in that it's a platform brand that has become, you know, has had greater awareness. So yes, you're right, it will be about Nokia phones, and I think increasingly we'll see at least design language similarity between Symbian and MeeGo, which will sort of make people not think they're the same, because I'm sure people will realize there are differences. But it does create a continuous story, if you like. And that is something that, you know, Android is going to have to address, that fragmentation issue. I think, you know, looking at Sony Ericsson and Samsung, and I think you can widen this out to anyone who was looking at doing a Symbian phone, what really put pay to that was the costs of bringing up hardware on the Symbian platform. And what I mean by that, the kind of adaptation layers which are necessary to get certain hardware working and running an operating system on, was always very expensive in the Symbian world, and it has been for a while. And we've talked about Shy, which is aimed at sort of cutting the costs of doing that kind of thing. So what it meant, it was hard for any manufacturer to come along and get the economies of scale that Nokia was able to achieve with the platform. You know, if you were going to pay for a chipset and an adaptation layer for kind of your hardware, you had to be planning several models. And so the Sony Ericsson and Samsung approach of just doing a couple of models on each sort of hardware family, if you like, was always going to be more difficult to compete with Nokia. And, you know, in one sense, this is putting it in a more general way, it was going to be difficult for any manufacturer to come along and compete with Nokia. And it doesn't really matter what platform it would be. You know, if, for example, Nokia was doing Android or Windows Mobile, it would be hard for other manufacturers to compete with them simply because of the scale and the size of Nokia. And they are able to achieve cost savings and afford the big investments which others may not be able to. but ultimately, I think, you know, you're perhaps not wrong there, David, when you say it's a positive thing, because, you know, you won't get this fragmented picture. And it is, you know, it sort of speaks to what I was saying before. It offers a clarity, you know, while the idea of having a fully licensed, you know, Symbian platform that others could use was obviously, you know, a good way to create a sustainable platform. I think it's been proved, you know, what's come out really of the Symbian Foundation is that didn't work. Would it ever have worked? That's more difficult to say. And I think you have to go 5 years back to what, or even 10 years back to what Steve was talking about earlier with the reference designs and the way the UI got split off then. And some wrong design decisions were taken, and, you know, all the issues around the architecture of Avcon and things like that. But, you know, bringing it back to the present, you have to live with the sort of historical context that you're in today, not the what might have beens. And in that sense, having that clarity, and, you know, Nokia is full speed ahead, and the Qt stuff coming in as well. We've said before that the sort of importance of the operating system diminishes, and it does in one sense as far as the consumer is concerned. But I think the technical advantage that Symbian has will probably become more apparent in the future, and will allow Nokia to compete effectively with, you know, the other platforms, and that's particularly going to be Android. And I think the easiest way to think of this from a consumer point of view is that you'll have two handsets priced the same, but the Nokia handset will probably have more capabilities because Symbian is able to run those on a sort of lower cost. You know, so what I mean by that is you don't have to have as fast a processor or the same amount of memory, and so you save money there, and you can spend it on maybe putting a better camera in or some extra sensors. And that sort of thing will become, I think, more apparent in the future, especially as the importance of the mid-tier market increases in smartphones.
Sorry if this is a silly question, Ray, but just going back to, you were talking about redundancy and the Symbian Foundation effectively being closed down. But surely if Nokia are taking the Symbian OS on board as an open model, and to use their terms, operating system, surely there'll be a lot of the Symbian Foundation employees would actually be best off just being brought under Nokia's wing to carry on doing the jobs they've been doing, because presumably those same roles will still be there.
Well, the only thing you can say to that is that they are two different organisations, so there's no straight transfer over possible. Nokia could rehire some of them, and I suspect some of those foundation staff will go and work for Nokia, but others will probably want to go on to other projects. And for a lot of what they do, you know, there are people within Nokia who have either been assisting or doing some of the work there, and, you know, they're quite capable of taking over those roles. And a lot of what the foundation is doing has been around this sort of governance model, the package ownership, release management and things like that. And Nokia actually already has its own release management for their internal code line of Symbian. So that's a duplication that probably doesn't need to be replaced. If you look at the contribution process, there is possibly an argument to be made there. How many staff you need to do that is not entirely clear, but, you know, there's probably enough. You know, Nokia has a lot of Symbian focused employees already, so I honestly don't know how many will be needed. You know, purely on based on some personal conversations, I know some of the foundation staff will be moving on to other projects, and, you know, it's an opportunity for them to change direction. I think most of them will be probably staying in mobile, or at least staying in the tech industry, but you're right, almost certainly some of them will end up working for Nokia, and some will go elsewhere.
And away from those slightly nebulous medium-range things to some short-term stuff, where the statement of follow the money is always appropriate. The latest figures are out from Gartner for Q3 and smartphone sales. Steve has been looking over these. Steve, can we look at these in a good way or a bad way, or both at the same time?
And these figures, as ever, can be spun in any way you want. This is from Gartner. It's not the full figures. You have to spend thousands of pounds with them to get the full report. They always release just enough to make it interesting, though. In this case, they're spinning out the figures by smartphone platform. So rather than having Nokia and HTC and Apple and so on, you have the platforms. So Symbian, Android, iOS, BlackBerry and Windows Mobile, and so on. Which in actual case, in most cases, apart from Android, each platform basically gets used by one manufacturer. In Symbian's case, Nokia, of course, so it's not too misleading. And if you look at the figures from purely a Symbian glasses half full point of view, okay, Symbian pad smartphone sales in quarter three 2010, 29 million, which I think, Rafe, was over 300,000 per day, which is impressive. And year on year, compared to the same quarter last year, it's up over 50%. So last quarter three 2009, 18 million, so up to 29 million per quarter, which is a large number. They're The downside is that the entire market is rising at a slightly faster rate, something like 96% up year on year. So the entire market is doubling year on year. So although Symbian powered smartphones sold, you know, 50% more than the previous year, that wasn't as much as the whole market. And the main reason for that is Android, as you most readers and listeners will probably realize. Android a year ago was almost nowhere. It was a million units in quarter three 2009. This year, 20 million, something like 80% of the figure for Symbian powered smartphones. Now, Ray's got his own predictions and charts, and they'll be up on the site in due course. But, we don't really expect Android to catch Symbian for a couple of years yet, because the Symbian range and field will also climb at something of a rate with the new Symbian 3 handsets coming online from Nokia. These figures don't include any of those, so no Nokia N8 sales, no C6, no C7, etc., etc. So the Symbian will start rising fast again. Android's going to carry on at a certain rate, although it will start to plateau at some point because there are only so many geeks out there, basically. iOS, surprisingly, although it almost doubled its sales year on year, the actual market share went down, which, again, you can make stats prove anything. You can say, yes, the iPhone is dying, but their market share went down, which is entirely misleading. Basically, all of these manufacturers, everyone, from RIM of the BlackBerrys, Apple with iOS, all the Android manufacturers and Symbian and Nokia, all of them went up year on year. And of course, the market share is 100%. It's a single pie. It could be divided up so many ways. But the overall numbers and the profit and the sales, they're rising, rising, rising. And as I say, the whole market doubling year on year. So still plenty to be optimistic about, whichever manufacturer and platform you support.
Absolutely. And I think the only one that's gone down really is Windows Mobile and sort of the generic Linux phones. But of course, Windows Mobile has got Windows Phone 7 launching in Q4. So that should come back in the same way that Symbian 3 will probably have a positive impact on Nokia's figures. I think it is worth highlighting just how fast Android has risen here. You know, in a year, it's gone from, you know, next to nothing, as you say. I think it's 1.5 million up to 20.5 million. Will that rise keep on going? Well, there's obviously going to go up a little bit more, but I think you can see from some of the announcements that Google have been making about activations a day, instead of increasing throughout the quarter, there hasn't been so much noise around that. Indeed, I think the sort of last figure was mentioned is they've crossed 250,000 or quarter of a million a day once or twice, but aren't doing it on so much of a regular basis. And given we're well into Q4 now, you know, you can actually read out that probably means that in Q4 they're going to reach somewhere between 20 and 25 million phones, or 25 million devices, I should say, because it does include some non-phone devices there. It's all to do with marketplace activations, I understand, from the Google figures with Gartner. I'm not quite sure exactly how they do the definition. The Symbian ones, yes, well, we can expect to see those go up because there'll be continued sale of the sort of low-cost Symbian 1 handsets, and it'll be interesting to see how much of an impact Symbian 3 has. I suspect the full impact of that won't be felt to Q1 because, of course, we've only had the N8 really on sale for the full amount of the quarter, and even then sales take a while to ramp up, and we've got the C7 starting sort of beginning of November really, and the beginning of November, and there's C601 just coming on stream probably in the next few weeks, realistically first week of December. But I think what Steve said is a rising tide carries all boats, and that's really what the smartphone industry is about, in that there's increasing sales and money to be made everywhere. And we talk a lot of time, you know, there's comparisons made between Android and iPhone, or Symbian and iPhone, or whatever it happens to be. But I think it's worth reminding people that the biggest market opportunity still comes from those people who don't yet own a smartphone. And in other words, the growth of the market provides the biggest opportunity rather than trying to poach, you know, devices from another platform. You're going to be able to grow much more easily by getting new people in for the first time. And of course, there is some crossover, particularly at the high end. But in terms of where the growth is, which is really the mid part of the market, most of that is going to come from people who are on feature phones. And so while it's always interesting to do these comparisons between platforms, I think people should do well to remember that actually the most apt comparison probably is still that between a smartphone of whichever platform and a feature phone such as Series 40 or any of the other proprietary operating system, which still run approximately 80% of the world's mobile phones.
Let me just throw up one thing there, though. The fact that people who don't have smartphones will be buying one in the future, a lot of their purchasing decisions are going to be made on image, on style, and the phones that they see celebrities using. And in
it's just not true. They'll be deciding it on price. That's by far and away the single biggest motivator for purchasing. The secondary one is probably what's available in your local phone shop. Yes, fashion does play a role, and yes, there is a trickle-down effect from, you know, people talking about what the coolest phone is, but particularly in the mid-tier of the market and the lower mid-tier, price is the most single most sensitive factor, and that is what will dictate the smartphone growth in the long term.
Yeah, just put a figure on what you were saying about the sort of dumb phone or feature phone users perhaps getting a smartphone for the first time, and the sense of, although the smartphone market is rising, just how much further it's got to rise. Is the smartphone sale now accounts still only for 19% of all mobile phone sales worldwide, which if you'd go back, cast your mind back to about 3 or 4 years ago, you'd have thought, well, the figure must be about 15% now. Surely by the year 2010, you know, half the people in the world will have smartphones rather than feature phones, but it's still only 19%. There is still a colossal market for the entire smartphone industry to keep rising and rising.
And of course, that's just new sales as well.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the installed user base, the number owning smartphones will, of course, be lower, not only because smartphone owners are more likely to upgrade their phones more frequently. You know, people have difficulty estimating it, but their general consensus is there's probably something in the region of 250 to 300 million smartphones out there, which, of course, isn't the number that have been sold in the sort of entire lifetime of smartphones because of replacement and other factors.
So there we go there then. Promising times, choppy waters, but it's always going to be fun to navigate. Now, Rafe, you said the Japanese market actually did have a place at the CES show. I saw a very small image of a wooden phone coming out of the Docomo stuff. Did you actually get your hands on these phones? Because, you know, this is a big bit of Symbian that's rarely talked about in the West, and that is the NTT Docomo's strength in Symbian handsets over the last 5 or 6 years.
That's right. I mean, for the last few years, they've regularly done 2 to 3 million smartphones a quarter running Symbian on Japan. I didn't actually get to see any of the new handsets. The wooden one you referred to is actually a sort of limited edition. I think there's going to be about 50,000 of them. It's kind of a concept phone that's actually been taken to the market in a commercial way, and it's all going to be unique because obviously the pattern or the wood grain on every piece of wood is going to be different. Exactly how that's going to work in the future sort of remains to be seen, but I think the implication is going to be that they will effectively license the platform or use the open source part of Symbian and continue to do their own customizations in terms of the UI on top of it, which is what they've done already. And these latest 11 devices that were announced, they're all running on Symbian 2, so actually a relatively recent version of the platform. And I suspect, you know, that the next generation of those phones will be based on what would have been the sort of Symbian 4 code line, which obviously is going to continue to exist. And I think the big thing coming in there, particularly for the Japanese market, will be multiple cores. And you'll see Renesas, which is the chipset manufacturer generally used by the Japanese phones, starting to take advantage of that. And they've been involved in, you know, Shy and other of those sort of core OS initiatives. So that from that point of view, that kind of Symbian activity is still very much alive and kicking and pretty healthy. But in one sense, you know, they were participating in the foundation, but they can continue to do so, you know, under Nokia. They don't really have an issue with cooperating with Nokia because there is that UI difference, and what they both want out of the core OS, which is ultimately sort of about performance, getting hardware up and running on it quickly, is going to be very similar indeed. Whereas Nokia will be doing its own UI and they will be doing their own UI. So that's kind of business as usual, and perhaps the, you know, best way to demonstrate that was the fact that these 11 new Japanese phones came out about the same time as the CES conference.
So there we go there. It is a busy time, and of course one of the advantages of Symbian 3, actually, given my delight for having all the naming conventions, Rafe, do we still call it Symbian 3 because it's now just the Symbian platform? Have you had any official word on that? Because I know you like to keep me right on these things.
Well, I'm going to continue to refer to it as Symbian 3 in its current form because I think it's easier to do so. What Nokia really announced was they're not going to talk about versions in their consumer messaging. It's just the Symbian platform as far as they're concerned. But of course, there will be, you know, versions being used in the background, if you like. But yes, I think you can say goodbye to the Symbian Hat 3 and Symbian Hat 4. It will probably just be referred to as, you know, by a version number of some description. And so Symbian 4 is definitely gone as a code line, but all the core OS functionality, you know, the things like Shy, like SMP, and quite a few other elements, you know, Nokia will have to create a new code line, if you like, separate to what is Symbian 3, to take advantage of all of that. But it will be far less visible, I suppose, in a sense. So we won't see that visible version number. But for the time being, we'll still see Symbian 3 talked about because, you know, there's been messaging around that, but in the future it will sort of just change to become Symbian platform. And I suspect, you know, it'll be interesting to see just how we differentiate between the different versions, but I think for ease of sort of clarity, we'll continue to use Symbian 3 on the podcast and the site because it differentiates it from S60 fifth edition or Symbian 1, and we'll then probably end up referring to the new Symbian to talk about some of the newer stuff coming down the road. But it is worth mentioning, you know, one of the announcements that we got, the kind of the formal announcement, we've talked about this on the podcast before, is there's a whole bunch of new improvements coming to Symbian 3 and what will be the PR2 releases for, you know, the N8 and the C7 and the other devices as well, of course. And that's going to be things like the new web browser, as well as a QWERTY keyboard in portrait mode, what's called split screen text entry, which means you won't get, you know, the text entry taking up the whole screen. It will sort of slide down with the keyboard so you can see what you're typing into, as well as, you know, there we go, 50 other at least enhancements. Beyond that, there's also going to be more coming on. I've got a few details on that, but there are going to be some changes to what we think of as the UI Chrome. So there's sort of going to be shiny new graphics, if you like, sort of more eye candy to look at. That will come later in the year. And that's some of the things that would have originally first appeared on the Symbian 4 phone. So I think it's going to be helpful to still refer to those Symbian 3 phones. And so the good news is we're going to see enhancements to those in very short order, some which we've talked about before, some which will reveal themselves. And in terms of timing, Nokia talked about early 2011. And if I had to put money on it, I'd say that probably means February. And I suspect we'll see a whole load of firmware updates, probably ahead of Mobile World Congress. But, you know, Nokia were at pains to say, you know, it will ship them when it's ready, not to a specific date. And this is all part of their kind of new ethos, is they don't want to talk about things in detail too much in advance. They will, you know, talk about in generalities, like there is new stuff coming, but you won't actually see precise details until shortly before things actually start happening, which I think is probably a good thing. And it's, people have been encouraging them for a while to do that sort of thing, and that applies just as much to software updates as it does to devices. And so that Symbian 3 name will be around for a little bit when we're talking about the current generation of devices, but then we'll sort of just fade away.
Now, Ewan was saying, do we say Symbian 3 or just Symbian? Now, something I've been wondering, very similar, and actually, if you're listening carefully to Riff, he touched on this, is S60 5th edition or Symbian 1? Now, let's take a vote on what we're all going to say. Either we say Symbian 1 from now on. Steve, what do you say?
I would have to say S60 5th edition, A, to be different to you, and B, because I think that will be least confusing for our readers who know they have already got an S60 5th edition device.
Ewan?
Well, it depends. Does that mean that we call 3rd edition Symbian 60, which would call it S600, which is actually a Samsung phone?
Yeah, just making my head explode now.
from an entirely technical point of view, the correct terminology is S60 3rd edition and feature pack 2, or 2.1 if you want to be precise. Symbian 1 is the official name, but most people know it as S60 5th edition, and so I suspect we'll be using those interchangeably. Symbian 3 for the current generation of hardware, and new Symbian, which will be for future devices.
There we are.
And in a year's time, we will go back to classic Symbian as well when we find out that the new UI isn't quite what everybody expected. Right then, that was your All About Symbian Insight podcast. As always, you can find more stuff on Symbian every single day, www.allaboutsymbian.com. You'll find us on Twitter and in all the usual places. A little buddy tells me that sometimes Steve hangs out on a Telnet client running Gopher, but that will be for the three other people. It all remains for me to thank you all for listening and thank our guests, which were Rafe Blanford.
Thanks, everybody.
Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye, and catch me on the phone show chat on Monday.
David Gilson.
Bye for now, and catch me and Rafe on the All About Mego podcast.
Yep.
And if you're listening from the National Union of Students, next time you might want to put in "Where should I riot" into OV Maps, and you'll be sent to the right Milbank address.